Welcome to the Displacement Urbanism podcast series, hosted through the London School of Economics. My name is Dr. Romola Sanyal, and I am Associate Professor in Urban Geography at the Department of Geography and Environment here at the LSE. In this podcast series, we explore how cities and displacement co-constitute each other. As we see millions of displaced people moving to cities and millions of people displaced in cities around the world, the questions of how these processes intersect are crucial. In this podcast, I will be interviewing a range of actors, including those who have been displaced in different ways and those who are involved in the management and the study of displacement. We will be going around the world to explore the different issues around this topic. I hope the podcast offers an opportunity to open up conversations around the politics and processes of displacement and urbanization, the different ways it can be experienced, understood, and approached. I also hope that the podcast demonstrates how these are global and interconnected issues, but also one that draws our attention to its local specificities. Welcome, everybody, to today's episode of the Displacement Urbanism podcast series. Today's episode is titled The Artistry of Migrant Women's Voices, Humanizing Displacement Through Text and Music. I'm delighted to introduce today's speaker, Dr. Caroline Wanjiku-Kihato, who is a visiting fellow at the University of Oxford's Department of International Development and a research associate at the African Center for Migration and Society at Wits University. She is also the founder and director of Frame 45, a social enterprise that uses storytelling and organizational ecosystem strategy to bridge the gap between research and social justice. Her career has involved both teaching and conducting research in the academy and the nonprofit sector, and is dedicated to making research accessible to wider audiences. Her research and teaching interests are migration, gender, governance, and urbanization in the Global South. She holds an MSc in Development Planning from the University of Wits and a PhD in Sociology from the University of South Africa. Caroline writes and has published widely on urbanization for both academic and popular audiences. She's the author of Migrant Women of Johannesburg, Life in an In-Between City, which was published by Palgrave Macmillan and Wits University Press. And she's also the co-editor of Urban Diversity, Space, Culture, and Inclusive Pluralism in Cities Worldwide, published by Johns Hopkins Press. Her collaborative installation, You Will Find Your People Here, is featured at the Venice Biennale that runs from the 20th of May to the 26th of November, 2023. Thank you so much for being on this podcast with us today, Caroline.
Thank you very much, Romola. I'm so happy and excited to have this chat with you.
So you have this fantastic book, Migrant Women of Johannesburg, Life in an In-Between City. And I wanted to ask you, how did you come to do this particular piece of research?
This project was part of my PhD research. And what I really wanted to do was two things. One was to recenter the African migration debate in sort of global studies. So we know that a lot of focus has been given on Africans migrating to Europe across the Mediterranean, but actually only 20% of Africans really leave the continent. Majority move within the regions. And this project was really a part of that conversation of bringing to the fore the fact that majority of Africans move within the region, and as they move, they shape the places and the spaces that they traverse. The second reason was really to recenter women in urban debates. Historically, we've seen the city through the male gaze, you know, through the flaneur, and how the flaneur traverses multiple spaces and shapes and changes urban spaces and cities. And what I really wanted to do was talk about how women actually shape and reshape the city, whether it's urban economies or urban governance or communities. I really wanted to bring that story out in the project. And that was my thought process.
Your book has some really incredible, powerful stories of these women who have migrated to South Africa from different countries, from Malawi, from DRC. I was wondering, in reading a lot of these stories and as a researcher, were there things that you discovered while doing your research that you didn't think about when you first embarked on this project? Were there things that surprised you in that research process?
In many ways, the book uses two registers in its approach. And the first is a biographical register. I'm a migrant woman myself and have had moved from Nairobi to Johannesburg in search of, you know, a better life. I had aspirations that Nairobi was not able to provide me. And so part of it was this sort of self-reflection around what does moving mean and how does moving shape not our subjectivities, but also the spaces that we embody in, you know, in the process of relocating. The other register is really a sociological analysis. And this obviously brings my sort of intellectual development and my, you know, my intellectual history into the story. And so in many ways, what surprised me was how I tried to fit the experiences of women into the sort of sociological frameworks that we are given. You know, so, you know, when you're learning around sociology and migration and mobility, it's all about the push and pull factors, right? So starting this project, I really wanted to try and understand the push and pull factors of how women move, and really trying to fit their lives in these frameworks that I had learned in school, that I had learned as a graduate student. And I shouldn't be surprised, but to my surprise then, of course they couldn't fit. None of that stuff made any sense to me. These frameworks just seemed unable to really explain how women moved or some of their motivations. And it was never really dualistic in that same way. It wasn't, oh, I got pushed from, you know, my home in Rwanda and pulled by my home in Johannesburg. There's always so much more complexity in human lives. And I think that this is really what surprised me, especially coming at it from a graduate student point of view, coming at it as a so-called intellectual and trying to fit these lives into these very neat boxes. And they didn't. And so the biographical sort of register really also helped me kind of nuance or surface the complexities of human life.
Some of the points that you were making in the book was this idea that you know, for a lot of women, they simply couldn't go back. So even if their lives in South Africa were quite difficult, they could not go back. And many of them also wanted to go elsewhere. So you talk about this sort of in-between space, like almost like a temporary life in a particular space, but then that becomes in a way permanent. And I wonder how we can think about that life. Is there a homemaking process that's taking place here? What kind of homes are people able to make by inhabiting this space that is simultaneously temporary but permanent?
Of course. I mean, I think that was really one of the big surprises for me, is this idea that these women lived in between, as you say, in between their past back home and a future, not necessarily where they were, but a future elsewhere. It may have been in another part of Johannesburg or another country or continent completely. And it startled me. You know, this was one of the first sort of lessons of dissonance, you know, between what I'd learned in theory and what I came across as a researcher. So, and it started very, you know, very casually. I would approach women at a bus stop or at the markets where they were selling their goods and you know, and ask them for permission to interview them. And then at the end of the interview say, you know, would they mind if I came back, if I had any more questions or if I wanted to talk to them again? And they'd say, of course, we don't mind, but I might not be here next week. And I'd say, okay. And, you know, and then they'd proceed to explain that, you know, this was a temporary stop for them. They were looking to head elsewhere. And I'd say, oh, that's fine. If I don't find you, that's all right. But the funny thing was, is for most of them, they were there next week, they were there in the next month, and they were there a year later. But they kept on saying, I might not be there next week when you come back. And for me, if there was one lesson that I learned from talking to these women and working with them in this way was that they lived these liminal lives, you know, these lives sort of in between. And if you think about it, this idea of being able to hold the in-between is so counter to the sort of dualistic ways in which we understand sort of intellectual frameworks. So it's the push or the pull. You know, it's never, it's actually a little bit of both. And, you know, and being in between became for me, you know, it opened up this whole world where I started thinking, well, what does it mean to live in between? What does it mean to think that you're not going to be there tomorrow, but you still have to perform domestic chores? You still have to, they were in the process of getting children, raising children, finding jobs, working, investing in little businesses. And how does the sort of this being in between impact all of that and shape the way that they do this? And in fact, that's what the book ends up exploring, is that through this sort of prism, this liminal prism, trying to understand, well, what does urban regulation look like? You know, how do they interact and engage with the rules of the game, the rules of the city? What does domestic life look like when at a drop of a hat, you are ready to get up and go, you know? Yet you are still in many ways rooting yourself there by, you know, getting children, getting married, finding work, you know. So you remain rooted and unrooted at the same time. And a lot of the book starts to kind of explore some of these nuances and experiences in ways that help us actually see the city in a very different way.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really important point. And I think that is something that I don't think many of us really think about is, you know, how do people live in this kind of space where it's sort of permanent yet temporary, with the aspiration to be somewhere else yet being in a particular place for a very long period of time. I think that comes out really beautifully in the book. The book does this really interesting job of blurring that distinction between, you know, what does it mean to be an economic migrant versus someone who's what one would refer to as being like a forced migrant in a way. I wanted to shift over to kind of talking about your book becoming an art project as well, and talking about it as being part of the Venice Biennale. So how did that process shape up?
You know, if I told you that I had a plan that, you know, all those 10 years ago when the book came out, that I had the plan for it to appear at the Venice Biennale, I would be lying. That was all happenstance, really. Fueled by, you know, a deep desire in my academic work to really figure out how sort of this kind of research can inspire social justice action, right? So how we can broaden the audience that reads these kinds of texts, how we can humanize the people and the spaces and the places that we're talking about, and how we can get a greater number of people to actually engage with the material. I mean, coming from the Global South and being a researcher, I feel that we invest so much of our time and a lot of money into the research work. And it's really important for me to see that that research actually makes a difference in the world out there. Behind all of this sort of research and behind the book, you know, it sat quietly for 10 years until Claire Loveday, who's a composer, in a South African composer, had picked it up and read it. And she herself, having come from Johannesburg, felt that the stories touched her in a way that was really interesting. She connected to a lot of the stories, but she also realized that these were people who had come from elsewhere and were also struggling with very similar emotions around belonging in the city, belonging in community, and feeling dislocated, either by the violence or by just the the nature of city, which is, you know, can be quite fast-paced. And so she approached me and we said, wouldn't it be lovely if we could work together? But at that point, we just really didn't know how. She's a composer and I'm a sociologist. How the heck do you work together? Anyway, and then she quite independently was having a conversation with a colleague of hers, Marilee Stolpe, who plays a piano. And Marilee had this idea of collaborating with Claire around this sort of vocalizing pianist project, which is something that I'd never heard of until I talked to them. And so Claire put two and two together and said, hey, I could bring this vocalizing pianist project to the book and create and compose something for Marilee that is a reflection of the women's testimonies in the book. And so that's what happened, you know. And at one point, we didn't know if there would be any audience for this, but we just thought that it was really cool that we all came in with these different passions. We're really excited about the material. So it was picked up and it was performed for the first time almost a year ago, a little over a year ago, at William Kentridge's Center for the Less Good Idea, which is based in Johannesburg. The performance was filmed. A few days later, it was picked up by Leslie Loco, who's the curator of the Architectural Biennale this year in 2023. And she said, this fits really well with my project on gender and geography, one of my special projects, and I'd love to bring it into the Venice Biennale. But of course, all we had was a book and a filmed performance. Well, music and a filmed performance. And to make it an exhibition, we needed something broader. So we brought in an artist, Awo Tsega, and the four of us, you know, sort of four African women, all working in this interdisciplinary way from very different disciplinary perspectives, produced this exhibition, which really was about telling the stories of women migrants in Africa, but also talking very, very poignantly to broader common human emotions about love. It's about loss. It's about struggle, it's about laughter, and it's about belonging, you know, the real yearning to belong in a place, in a space. It was a complete fluke, but it was an exciting process to be part of, really.
So what's the reception been of the project in South Africa and in the Biennale? I mean, I'm curious to know whether the migrant women whose stories have been portrayed through this sort of very exciting medium have been able to view it, or have they been able to listen to the performance, or do they know that it's their stories that are being told?
So we haven't had the exhibition in South Africa yet. And that's coming in the next while. We're hoping to get some funding to do that. In terms of the women, you know, whenever as an academic, when one does this kind of work, and you'd know it as well from yours, you know, there's always the question around the ethics of exposing people, populations that might be vulnerable, the ethics of, you know, of representing, although we very, very specifically say we are not representing, we are responding to, you know, but there's always, you know, there's always questions one has to think about and go back to one's sort of interlocutors to find out how they feel about this kind of thing. And one of the things that has continuously surprised me in the work that I've done with these women is how incredibly brave and courageous they are. The book had a visual component to it, which asked women to create pictures of a day in their lives. And we spoke endlessly about the ethics about showing these images, particularly if they could be identified, you know, and it was always it was always majority said, we want our stories heard and we want to see ourselves on these stages, you know, taking, you know, our images standing out as part of the city, our voices standing out as part of the sort of chorus of voices in the city. And the exhibition was quite similar. And there was such excitement with the women that I had spoken to. Of course, you know, given the fact that this exhibition was actually in Venice, there was the politics that, you know, the Venetians or the Europeans want our art, but they really don't want to see us there. You know, actually, even as an artist trying to get a freaking visa to get to Europe to create this thing that people were so willing to, was so difficult. And we weren't the only ones, you know, struggling with access to the space so that we could show in the way that we wanted to show. So there is a paradox, and the paradox is that these women's voices are unapologetically at the Arsenale in Venice, where they are not wanted. But this kind of there's this sort of mirroring of this the location and dislocation. You know, they are in Europe, and their voices are here, even though the Europeans would rather not have them around.
I think there's some really interesting points that you raise here about how the narratives of people, their art, their cultures are wanted within these exhibition spaces in the West, but the people who have provided that material for those exhibitions to take place, those narratives, those pieces of art are not wanted. And it's kind of interesting also that, you know, the voices of these women are present in the Venice Biennale, but they themselves are not, because they are not given the permission to actually travel to Venice to hear themselves being narrated in this exhibition space. And it points to this sort of very extractivist culture that is pervasive, isn't it? And I know that even in academia that we have the same sort of issue, that, you know, we do research in other countries and we go and we gather information and our knowledge and so forth, and then publish it in books and papers and so forth. And that knowledge is transferable, and that's welcomed within academic settings. But the people who are providing that knowledge, who are the ones who are being interviewed, who are being studied, are not welcome. And there's a very interesting sort of parallel experience here between what we do as academics and what you are talking about within the Biennale space as well.
No, absolutely, absolutely, and it's the same process, right? It's like it's this contradiction, you know, in society, you know, in Western societies, that, you know, will consume, you know, all these spaces and these people's sort of art and culture, and yet want to keep a distance from you know, from actual people. And there's a, I want to say inhumanity, but it's not even that. It's almost a contradiction. It's almost farcical. There's a kind of weirdness about that. You know, I can't explain it because I can't speak for people from other parts of the globe. But I think what is really interesting is about this kind of work. Is the sort of ways in which we can subvert and surface these voices, even in spaces which the people themselves are not welcome. For example, for us, you know, the voices of those women will remain in Venice. They are there, even though they're not supposed to be there or they're not welcome. You know, and there's a sense of some kind of satisfaction. But actually, moving beyond the ego, there's also a sense of really trying, using this music, using, you know, leaving the sort of walls of text and footnotes that, you know, a book, the artifact of a book provide, and using music that goes straight to the heart, you know, leaving sort of the brain to and going to the heart, and having people across different geographies connect to these stories through music, but connect as human beings, connect to these sort of common emotions that cross geography, cross, you know, humanity, cross races, etc. And for us, I think that in the end, that is all that we could have hoped for, is this opportunity to really bring these stories forward in a way that allows people to stop and think about how these lives connect to theirs, how these yearnings of belonging and fighting dislocation and looking for security, you know, and raising children, how these very common, mundane, everyday sort of human emotions and feelings really connect, you know, are relatable across, no matter who you are, and hoping that actually brings these women a bit closer, makes them a little bit more human in the eyes of those that are, you know, sort of attending and hearing this exhibition.
Yeah, I was going to say that I think one of the things that is really fantastic is the musical element that the words have been translated into music, and that each of these women have a different sort of palette of music that's assigned to them to tell their stories. And it's really wonderful because it adds a different dimension to understanding the experiences of these migrant women in Johannesburg, which you would not necessarily get just from reading it. And I think the music is really quite evocative. It's absolutely wonderful to listen to that and listen to the narration on top of the music. Thank you so much, Caroline, for being on this podcast again and for sharing your work with us and your amazing book.
Thank you, Romola. It's been a great pleasure. Thank you.